First of all, thank you for allowing us to be able to go and represent Wayside in Africa. And in case you're all wondering where we are, we're in the back, so you don't the picture's up in front. Anyway, you can tell we're on an airplane here, and I'll tell you a little bit about what happened on our way over when we arrived in Lyon, France with Aubrey and Monica. We found out after we arrived there on Monday night that our flight to Bangui in the Republic of Central Africa, which was to be the next morning, was canceled until that following Friday night. So we had about 4 days when we were stranded in Lyon, France, and Germany, and Switzerland, and really suffering in that part of Europe. We're not showing you the slides of Europe this morning, but we want to show you these slides in Africa. We boarded the plane at 1 o'clock on Saturday morning and flew for 8 hours, and this is the next morning. We're arriving in the Republic of Central Africa. We're just coming down to where you can begin to see the land. It was extremely smoky and dusty. They've had a real dry season. In fact, in many parts where we were, they had not had rain since November the 12th. And this was on January the 20th. The dirt is extremely red. This was the last picture that I was able to take as we came down the runway. The Republic of Central Africa is, there's a lot of turmoil there today. And as we came closer on the runway, you could begin to see the military men as they gathered around. And in the terminal itself, there were a lot of military people. And so the missionaries told us to put our cameras away and not take any pictures at this point. So this is after we left the, we took about 2 hours to go through immigrations there, customs at the airport, and we're on our way away from the airport. And this is just some of the sites in Bangui. This is the last paved road that you'll see that we saw for 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks. This is in the city of Bangui. And here's one of your typical roadside markets. The bread there immediately to your left, long loaves of bread were one of the few things that we found we could eat that you could buy along in the markets. And the bread was fairly good. We were picked up in a truck. In fact, this was the truck that we were picked up in the airport. And from that time on, I saw nothing but the back ends of pickups for the next 2.5 weeks, as well as Aubrey. And here we are with everything loaded up, and you'll appreciate this picture of McGann. We really enjoyed the time with Aubrey and Monica, and Aubrey had this, I guess it's a khaki hat of some kind, a military hat, and this did get him into some trouble the first day we were out, and so he put on another hat you'll see later on in our... We're on the boat now. We did have it happen exactly as Bob Dylan said it would. When we arrived in Bangui, we were supposed to take an MAF plane from Bangui, the Republic of Central Africa, and fly to Tandala. And this would have only been about an hour flight, but instead, because the MAF plane had crashed the week before, the pilot had to make an emergency landing and totaled the plane, but he was okay himself. There was no MAF plane for us to get around, so we had to cross the river, a river about the size of the Mississippi. And we did it in a little dugout canoe with all of our luggage. And this is a picture of Monica as we're on the canoe. And here are the two boys on the back that had a little motor as we sped across. And these are some of the sites along the river. You'll notice that that is a home on the left-hand side of your picture, and the mother and some children standing to the right. Here's all of our luggage. We unloaded it from the dugout canoe. We're now waiting on the pickup to come and pick us up.
Here is a lady that met us as we were unloading our things there. She was walking along the top of the hill and proceeded down with this huge kettle on her head. And she did not know us. She couldn't speak any English, and we could speak very, very little Lingala. But when we said Bote to her, which means hello, she got so excited she came running down there with that kettle on her head and set it down and proceeded to try to talk to us in Lingala. And she knew exactly who we were, who was picking us up, and where he was taking us. So the word had already spread, but she was a very dear, sweet Christian lady.
First night we were there, it took us 2 hours to go through customs, and it is helpful. If any of you ever go to Zaire, take a box load of BIC pens, because they're extremely valuable when it comes to getting through customs. It will really facilitate and speed up your paperwork. And that was a mistake we made. We had no BIC pens. They were always asking for them. It did take us a couple hours. We finally made it through. The first night we stayed in this little mission's house, which is right on the Ubangi River. And this was sunset on the Ubangi River that night. It's a beautiful spot. The housing itself and the area around was rather dirty. But here's the house that we stayed in. You'll notice the blue barrels on the side of the house. This is how the missionaries get their water. They have water girls who come early in the morning and fill these with their large kettles of water. And then when you want to take a shower, the water by gravity flow comes down into the shower on the left, and you just sort of turn the water on and lather up, then you turn it off and then turn it back on to rinse off. And here are some more pictures of canoes and the sunset that night. And here's Connie and Monica doing their thing in the kitchen. This is a missionary by the name of Merle Wester, who's been in Zaire for over 30 years now. He's kind of one of the old patriarchs in Zaire. This is the first night we stayed there in this little room, and the termites were so bad you could hear them chewing all night long. And there's the coal oil lamp. Now, this is typical of the road we traveled, a 200-mile journey. Between 150 and 200 miles on this road, you average about 10 miles an hour. It was a two-day trip. And you can see the stones and the road and the reason why. Only four-wheel drive vehicles, pickups. We never saw a car for 2 weeks in Zaire. This was a fellow whose picture I took, and he was rather upset about it and came back and wanted some money. Typical home and mother and her children out in front. As we drove through the jungle and made it out to this plateau, we stopped momentarily just to take pictures from this high area. And here's the pickup we were in, Aubrey and myself in the top. 2 days of bouncing around in that. It was a lot of fun. And there's Monica. You can see it really was beautiful country. There's another example of the road. I'll never complain about roads in America again.
The roads are in really good shape here, too. The missionaries tell us that during the rainy season, they are just totally impassable. They are very sandy, and then they get very sticky. And when they drive in them, you slide really completely off the road. This is a termite hill or an ant hill, and they have a lot of these all across the country. You see these huge mounds. Most of them have grass growing out of them, and that means that they're inactive.
First day out on the road, we found some rather unique things happening to us. We hadn't passed any trucks yet that morning, and we came down into this area, and here are three brand new Toyota trucks that the Africans had evidently just received sometime earlier. And they're beginning to fix the roads at this point. And when we pulled up in the pickup, they were not going to let us by. And of course, this is the only road in that whole part of the Ubangi. And so they held us up for some time. And Merle Wester, the missionary who was able to speak their language, he told them, he said, fellas, we really need to get these people on. They're from America. We don't want our country to look ridiculous. And you need to let us get by. And so the first two truckers moved up to the right along beside us, out of our way, but the guy in the back truck, he decided that he was going to back up, and evidently he hadn't driven the truck very long, but he started to turn crosswise in the road, and when he did, he swung the truck into a tree with his left front fender, knocked the mirror off, and dented the truck in, and he was so upset that he turned the truck engine off sideways in the road, and turned the engine off, took the keys out, and walked back to the village. And here we are sitting here, and the Africans are beginning to gather around us, and it got a little bit tense, and Aubrey's sitting up there with that GI hat on, and they begin to call him an Americano, and a few of them had machetes in their hands. You'll see the machetes in a little time. And it was rather tense. I put my camera away at this point. But before long, the fellows went back to the village. Our missionary told them, said, you know, these Americans are going to really think you guys are ridiculous if you don't do something. Said, they just don't do this in America. And so they went back to the village and got the driver, and he came back, and he got in his truck and turned it on and pulled it up and went by us, and you could just see he was really, really hostile. One of the things that really will stick out in my mind about Africa is the poor nutrition. Especially you see it, the effects in the children, in their faces, distended stomachs, many eye problems. In fact, I'll let Connie tell you a little bit about this from Dr. Bill Colby, who's one of our medical doctors that we're supporting there.
Dr. Colby is mainly in charge of just general medical and surgical at the hospital, but recently, because of some ophthalmologists that have come over from the States to teach, he has really gotten interested in this, and so he spends a lot of time now doing eye surgeries and removing cataracts and things of this nature, and he really seems to enjoy that, and it's, of course, a real blessing to the people.
Goiter problems are also very common over there. I don't have any in my slides today, but you'll see a lot of goiters and just other problems that are so readily visible the minute that you come in contact with them. Here's some of the pastors. The one standing right next to me to my left is probably the oldest pastor in the Ubangi, and his wife is standing between Connie and myself. And then the fellow second in from our right is the roving evangelist who traveled with us most of the time, and he speaks Baka and Lingala, and he was the interpreter for Aubrey and also interpreted me on one occasion. And the fellow on the far right is a pastor there too. This is the Oasis, another free church mission called Bau. I believe it's B-A-U in English. And a rather nice little place in the midst of a lot of villages that are just the typical villages there with the Sobe roofs. And anyway, this is a girls' school there. They have 78 girls that they're teaching English and also teaching them the Bible. And this school is right there in Bau, and here were three of the girls that we got their pictures as they came by. There's a group of the missionaries as we ate together the first night in Bau. And then they also asked me that night if I would speak to the missionaries, so I had an opportunity to speak to this group of missionaries in Bau. Here's a pickup that we took the second day. And again, it was like much like the first as we started out that morning, just after sunrise. You see Africans coming out of these high weeds. Some of these weeds must have been grass, must have been 15 feet or 20 feet high. And you'd be driving along, and all at once you just see them kind of step out of the bush. Here is the ferry. They have no bridges in the Ubangi, so they did have this ferry to take the pickup across. The only problem was the ferry operator wasn't there that day. And so we had about another 45-minute wait, and so I just stood around and took pictures.
While we're standing around taking pictures there on the bank of the river, people were cooking. Every place you go, you see there are women sitting out cooking. And some of the things that they cook are makembas. They're plantains that they slice in strips and cook till they're real crisp in palm oil, and they're something like fried bananas. And that's the one food, I think, that I was able to tolerate more than any of the others.
Okay. The ferry operator finally came, and you can see the truck is now on the other side. We resume our journey, and we hadn't driven very long until several of the boys stepped out with his little monkey, and this second day we had several other passengers riding with Aubrey and myself in the back, and one of the pastors wanted to buy this monkey for his boys, so he made a deal with these boys, and then all at once they came carrying two other monkeys that they just killed. It's interesting to see this. What they do is they take the tail and tie it around the neck of the monkey, and then they carry it like a satchel. And they will eat these monkeys, but many times whoever kills them will, rather than eat the monkey, which would be better protein than what they normally get, they'll turn around and sell the monkeys for the money. This was another hindrance the second day. This was a major problem. We came upon this tree that had come down across the road, and there must have been about 60 Africans who were standing around. They only had one axe between them, and so they were taking turns going through this. I would say it was another 45-minute to hour delay, and they finally made it through, and then they all got on the log and began to carry it away.
This is just another scene as we're driving through the villages. Steve had a difficult time taking pictures from on top of that truck the way he was bouncing around, but That is just a typical scene in every place we went. Everybody came running out to the roadsides yelling, Bote, Bote, and Boteo, which is just another slang term. Here again, you can see the tummies on the children and how distended they are. And we saw a lot of herniated little belly buttons and just a lot of things that were just so sad and reminded us of the fact that their nutrition certainly isn't what it should be. And we have much to be thankful for here.
The doctors in Tandala were telling us that one of the reasons, probably the major reason for the people being so lethargic is the fact that their hemoglobin count is so low. Normal hemoglobin count for people here in the States would be somewhere between 14 and 20, 16 to 20 for men and 14 to 18 for women. And in Africa, you never see anyone that's as high as a 10. In fact, many of them are as low as 3 to 5. Most of them are between 3 and 5 or 6. And so that's the reason why you never see them running or doing anything, exerting a lot of energy. In fact, when I would go out on my daily runs, it was almost like I was in a marathon as the people would gather around to watch you run. They just couldn't believe that these crazy Americans would burn up that kind of energy.
This is a market in the street as we're traveling along, and they have their little wares out there that they sell for whatever they can get. A lot of things are shipped from the States. Here you see sugar cane laying down there. And another thing that the women prepare that is their main thing in their diet is called fuku, and it's made from the manioc root, which they pound and pound and beat down to a very fine pulp, and they mix it, if they have corn, with it. And they beat this and pound it until it's a fine mixture, and it turns out to be like thick oatmeal, and it's wonderful tasting. If you believe that, you'll believe anything. No. This is another little thing called kwanga, and it's a gooey pasty type thing, something like a soft licorice, and it's wrapped in a leaf, and that was something else I couldn't quite handle.
Here is the main street. And this is, I'm not sure whether that's a bank over there or what. Here's the town tailor. He's out doing his work on the front. The other guy's holding the shed up there for him. This is the Free Church in this little community. And again, more clothes. It was interesting that every now and then you'd see a T-shirt or something with a Dallas Cowboy or a Pittsburgh Steeler or whatever. And I guess people just kind of send these clothes, donate them to people in the Ubangi, and many of them that reach there, then they turn around and they'll sell them to somebody. More of the cooking.
One of the only vegetables that they have to eat is a manioc leaf, and it's something like a spinach, and that is about the only vegetable they have. And if you come for dinner, they will usually serve you some sort of a meat sauce, and that is about the best tasting thing that they make. This is a water wheel. This is something that's very unusual through the villages, and very, very few had them, but they have a way of pumping up the water from the ground. This is a pastor's home. As we were traveling on our way to Tandala, we discovered that this pastor knew we were coming, and he insisted that we stop by for lunch. And I was so excited, I couldn't wait to have my first African meal. And so we get inside, and they serve us chicken and their pondu and their fried makembas and hot tea, which is something they serve to guests that's very, very sweet. And they put cream in it, and this is something that they consider a real special luxury for guests.
It really made us feel very important to be over there, because you're, as a white person, you are so rare that they consider you to be special there. And when they heard that the McGanns and Connie and myself were coming through, and they would invite you to a meal like this, and then afterwards they would have a parade. The little monkey was sitting out on top of the while we were eating, but they had a parade for us afterwards, and these kids just kept coming. They were singing and marching in order, and I don't know how many kids. There must have been at least 1,000 of these kids. Here's the Free Church in this little community. I want those of you who are architects to take notice of that. Of course, it's so warm there, being next to the equator, that they really don't need much of an enclosure. We arrived the second day because of the problem with the log and a few other things, waiting on the ferry operator. We were about 3 hours late. And when we arrived, they had organized a big welcoming ceremony, and I guess they originally had a couple thousand people there in Tendala who were out underneath this banner. At 12 o'clock, they were about 3 hours early, and we never came, so they waited and they waited. Finally, they all disbanded, and then we showed up, and they wouldn't let us go on until we sat there and waited until the people got back. And so I got out and took pictures. They had to sing and read a little bit and give a formal greeting. They love that kind of thing. They're very people-oriented. That's what you'll love about the Africans. They don't have much in the way of possessions. In fact, nothing. But they love people, and they just want to be around you when you'd stop. They'd want to shake your hand and talk with you. And, boy, if you can speak the language, it's just really neat. Here is, in the back, the only fellow there in the picture is a fellow by the name of Stan Stone. He's a medical doctor who has his practice in Minnesota. He and his wife, who's next to him, came down for 2 months just to donate their time there at the Tendala Hospital, also to help give physicals to the missionaries and then just work with the everyday problems that come up among the Africans. Their daughter, Jenny, is a nurse who is permanent there, and she's the one standing next to Connie. We ate with them the first morning, had breakfast with them. That's the little home that we ate in, and here we are on our way back, and thought that was rather picturesque. I want you to take a good look at this home, because in a few moments you'll see this home in flames. This is one of the homes that's been there for about 30 years. Notice the African on the roof who is putting new leaves on the roof, grass. And this is what they call a sobi roof. It's a cement foundation house, but it has a straw roof. And this is where Aubrey and Monica were staying, where we had our first meal on the day we arrived. I'm going to let you tell Connie tell you about these ladies.
We think we have it tough here, ladies. Look at these gals. They do all the work. The men sit around and talk. The women go to the gardens and work, and they carry these tremendous loads on their head, and you can see the big machete there that she uses to cut down whatever she's cutting in her garden. But they have got the strongest backs and necks of anybody I've ever seen.
Stories told by one of the missionaries there that one of the fellas, one of the Africans, bought something there in Tendala, and he was going to take it back to his home, but he couldn't pick it up. And so he sent word back to have his wife come, and she came, and he put it on her head, and she carried it back home. This is the way they carry their children.
These women are incredible. They get up before dawn, go to their gardens to work, and if they have a baby, the baby goes right on the back along, so there's no problem. This is Bill and Norma Colby's home, where Steve and I stayed, and Norma is on the porch teaching her women. She has a group of Bible school students' wives, and she teaches them every day reading, writing, because they do not know how to read or write. She gives them Bible studies. She teaches them child care, family relationships, just general hygiene. So she really has her work cut out for her. This is the hospital, Tendala. Many of you know that we have been sending barrels of things to this hospital over the years. Bill Colby here is doing surgery. It was a 14-year-old girl who, because of nutrition, they have a lot of problems that bacteria and different things get into the body. It eats away at the bone and just totally destroys the body. And here he is doing surgery on an infected hip, and he said probably this girl would never be able to walk because the bone deterioration was so bad. And this is just around the outside of the hospital. When a person goes into the hospital, the family goes right along. The family will take their grass mats and sleep on the outside, or for a while they said they even slept beside or under the patient's bed in the hospital. But you see, the wives or whoever is responsible for the food for the family, so they have to go and prepare the meals and take care of them. This is the pharmacy area, and you see people standing around there. This is inside one of the men's wards. Just more wards. This young fella had fallen out of a tree and broken his leg or hip, and he was sitting out there in the sun, and his wife was sitting on a mat beside him preparing his lunch.
Actually, he was paralyzed and would be permanently paralyzed. So his wife will stay there probably indefinitely and just fix food for him and keep him company. There's another mother and her child right outside of the hospital. These fellas are all in traction. Many of them had had accidents. One of the typical homes, Cabin A, out there to the left in the back of the house. These are typical all over Africa. And here's the Institute, the Bible Institute. I had an opportunity to speak to the students there on two different occasions. These two nurses on Connie's right are gals who are only there for a short period of time. They call them short-termers, but they just render an invaluable service right now as nurses in Tyndall. In fact, many of the nurses over there actually do surgery, appendicitis operations, and other things that they couldn't do here in the States. And there's Bill and Norma. We enjoyed practicing with them at night. Bill has a real nice bass voice, and Norma's an alto. So we did some quartet numbers during the Crusades, and we would learn them in Lingala. And then on the end, we'd have Bill go down way low in those deep bass notes, and the Africans, they really loved that. These are the students one night that I spoke to. We sang and spoke to, I guess there must have been 25 or 30 young men who were there. And this is my interpreter, Norm Chapman, on my left. Every time we would have a service, we would always have people, give people the opportunity to come forward. And never once would you speak that somebody didn't come forward. Even in the scene there a moment ago with the boys, about half of those boys came forward at the end. And how many of them are serious? You just really can't tell, but at least it gives the missionaries some knowledge of who really wants some help, and so the missionaries then can follow them up.
Here again are the wives that Norma teaches each morning, and she asked me if I would speak to them one morning, so she's interpreting for me, and because she had told me a lot about their culture, the fact that they live in fear and superstition, the average age of,
Only one out of three children make it to the age of five.
And the average age is around 45, so the women have as many children, basically, as they can have, because they know that many of them are not going to survive. So this day I spoke to them on Isaiah 43 and dealt with fear.
Yeah, actually the lifespan of the people is about 41 or 42 years of age. You see very few people who are older than 45. Some of these gals could carry, it must have been 100 pounds in their head, not this load, but some of them would carry these big logs. Here's the home where we ate the second day, and this home also you'll see going up in flames in a few moments. Here is the beginning of the crusade on Thursday afternoon. We must have had probably a couple thousand people on that particular day that came and sit there through 2 hours of singing and Aubrey's preaching. They just sort of get wherever there's any shade. You can see it's a rather large crowd. They have nothing else to do with their time, so if there's a meeting going on in town, they'll be there. Connie would sing some of those songs where she'd go up real high on the end, and we particularly wanted that because the Africans love to hear Bill go down real low, and they love to hear Connie go real high. And they just ooh and ah after it was over with. And on the closing crusade, Connie had a lady come up to her. Maybe you want to share this.
Now, as we were leaving to walk back to the house, this little old lady comes up to me to greet me, and she went to shake my hand, and as she did, she placed an egg in my hand. And this was her gift to me, and just her expression of appreciation, and it was really touching to me because this little old lady probably had two chickens and probably only one of them laid, and that was probably the egg for the day.
This was rather interesting. You know, in Africa, everywhere you go, the women, many of them do not wear anything above the waist, but you never see the men without a shirt on. And on this particular day, one of our short-term missionaries, right while Connie was singing, came walking through the area without any shirt on. And every African in the place turned and looked and was laughing, and we all kind of wondered what was going on, and Connie, I know, was wondering what was going on because nobody was looking in her direction. And he came walking over to me. I got his picture here. He came walking over to me. He says, "What are they looking at?" And I said, "Well, maybe it's because you don't have your shirt on." He says, "Oh, my." He says, "I can't believe it." So he had it in his back pocket. He put it on, but then they immediately turned around. He ain't heavy. He's my brother. Now, this was on, I believe it was on Friday morning. They asked us, Connie, and myself if we would sing and speak to the children. And I thought maybe there'd be 100 or a couple hundred children. They just kept coming. Now, these are just the boys here coming in. And now you can see clear back in the back. Here come the girls. And by the time they got in, there must have been at least 1,500 kids there. And about, I suppose, 700 of those kids came forward. The missionaries tried to deal with them the best that they could. Here are the pastors and wives and students. This is before I start speaking. That's why they look so uninterested at this point. I thought I'd better clarify that for you. It's not like the early service here. This is myself up speaking, and Bill Colby is doing my interpreting for me on this day. In fact, Bill interpreted for me for a little over an hour. Then he had an hour break in between our sessions, and he went back and removed the eye of an eight-year-old boy at the hospital, and then he came back to again to translate for me for another hour. And after it was over, we took the picture of all the students. Now, the next several pictures are really self-explanatory. This is some of the problems that the missionaries have. This was a fire we were supposed to eat in this home that you'll see in a moment. And the fire got started, they believe, because some of the boys were making charcoal down below in the gardens, right below the compound. There was a bad wind that day, and so you'll see now exactly what happened as Connie sings this song, "I Thank You, Lord, for the Trials That Come My Way." Before it was over, two of the homes had burned down, and couple of storage sheds with a lot of the possessions of the missionaries, a lot of the storage fuel. The fuel and storage had blown up, which is very valuable to them. There you can see the different barrels of masut and diesel fuel gas that were blowing up. Fire went down the runway where the MAF plane lands and was heading towards the Tandala Hospital. The Africans were getting very concerned as it moved towards their homes. 18 African homes were burned down just below Tandala before the fire was put out. But the fire was going up that runway faster than the Africans could even run. It parted and went both ways around the compound of Tandala. For a time, it looked like the whole compound was going to be threatened. And as we took a lot of the possessions out of the homes, we had to watch them then because there would be a certain amount of looting here by those who weren't believers. But many of the Africans who were Christians were very helpful. On the following Sunday morning, I spoke to this group of men. Most of them were men at the TB leprosarium there. And they came outside and I spoke to them on hope from 2 Corinthians chapter 5. They were very receptive. That Sunday afternoon, we had the largest and closing crusade. We had estimates of anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 people that were there, but they just kept coming and kept coming. And they were seated under the trees and around the homes, and just every place you look, there were people. And I would estimate that there were probably close to 1,000 of these people that came forward afterwards to be dealt with. There's a mother that Connie loved her little daughter so that she wanted to get her picture.
This lady was one of the real strong leaders among the women, one of the pastor's wives, and she had several children, but this was her littlest one, and she was such a cutie that I just had to get her picture. After the crusade, I had told Norma, I said, would you please ask her if we can have a picture? And she'd given her little girl to somebody else to take care of while she helped with the counseling. And so we walked back to the house, and when we got back there, I looked out in the yard, and there she stood. She had walked all that way over there with her little girl just so we could get a picture.
I just want you to see that Connie was building up her right forearm. And it's amazing what she can do. These are some of the fact, I believe all of these people are doctors and their wives. The one older couple there in the middle, they're both medical doctors, Frank and Betty Staub and Salt. And they were in public health back in the States, and they've come over there to try to help in some of the areas of public health. And then I spoke to the missionaries on the closing night. These are the missionaries in Tandala. We had a good time. I really challenged him in the area of discipleship. Monday morning, Aubrey and myself were both involved in, Aubrey and I were both involved here in doing follow-up work for about 3 hours. We took turns alternating and teaching on just some of the basics of the Christian life. We must have had somewhere around 1,000 people that came back for follow-up. Following day, we left Tandala, and here's how we left in this Saviem truck. And one of the Africans was moving with us, had all of his possessions. By the time we got the truck loaded, including Aubrey and myself in the back, we had about 20 people on the top of this Saviem, and it was about a five-hour ride on that same type of road. Every time they'd hear we were coming through a community, they'd have a big welcoming committee, and here they are in one of the towns. We finally arrived at our destination that day, had lunch with this old fella that used to live here. His wife still lives there, but his name is Palindo. He was the great evangelist of the Ubangi. He was like a Billy Graham here in the States, looked upon as a prophet, and they honored him as a prophet. He had the nicest house here in the whole Ubangi area, and we had the privilege of eating there that one day. Then we said goodbye to Aubrey and Monica, went down, had to cross another river with our luggage. We haven't seen them since, but here we are moving to our nest. Yeah, we've seen our luggage since. We haven't seen them again since. We're moving on to the town of Kala. And here we are in Kala. We stayed in that home. Here's one of the franzi-pansy trees for you ladies who love the beauty of some of the blossoms. And Kala sets right on the Ubangi River. So I've got some pictures here of some of the scenes across the Ubangi River. It's about a mile across. There's a big barge right down below us. And here's one of the trees that Connie was standing next to. Another scene, you'll notice the village right below. Here's the group of pastors and their wives and seminary students that I spoke to there in Kala. And now we're down with the pygmies down below Kala. You'll notice Connie standing in the back. These are all full-grown people. Some of them are almost 5 feet high, and probably many of them would not be even 4 feet tall. But they were real glad to see us. We walked down into the jungle and spent a little bit of time talking with them. Here's a typical of one of their homes that Connie's standing next to. Ladies, how would you like that? Wouldn't spend a lot of time cleaning house, for sure. There are some advantages to their way of life. Here we are on our way back. We're with the missionary Steve and Carol Lyons. We really appreciate them. Strong on discipleship. They've had a navigator background and are really involved with the people there. Here's the pastors that I spoke to on the word and study habits and different things. And then we had a meeting on one day where, these are the children that we sang for and spoke to. And then that afternoon they had a whole church meeting come. And I took this picture early, but the church was really packed out by the time everybody arrived. And they enjoyed Connie singing so much that the pastors asked if they could get her on tape. So they got her tapes down there now that they're using. Here's Connie with three of the pastor's wives. And this was a parrot that Steve and Carol had, and I'm not sure what it's eating there, but I don't know why I threw that picture in. Anyway, it's there. Here are some of the missionaries that we were able to go swimming with on the Ubangi one night. The thing I want you to notice is that these are just common, ordinary people. You'll notice Merle Wester there again on the right, and some of the younger missionaries, the Lyons, and another couple by the name of Robbins who are there. They're working in translation, trying to translate the scriptures, or with Wycliffe organization. We just had a great time of fellowship with all these missionaries. We finally went back to the city of Bangui by way of truck again. The two men that took us back are the two men in the center of the picture, the big tall fellow with a beard. He's the pharmacist there that gave up a comfortable livelihood here in the States and went out to work in Tandala, and he's one of them who lost his home. He lost quite a few of his possessions, a camera, a watch, I'm not sure what all, in the fire when his house burned up. And he's the one who put his arm around me and said, "Steve, I didn't lose a thing." He said, "Everything that I have is up there." And just an example of a man that's really committed. The fellow next to Connie on her left is a man by the name of Lauren Lewis. He and his wife, he was a biology teacher here in the States, and he's over there now working with Africans in discipleship ministries. He's also, a lot of the physical work that he does, he's a handyman, and he is able to keep the vehicles running, which are so important to the missionaries. The fellow on both the far left and the far right, man on the far right is Ted Olson, who came down. He's a pastor at the Arlington Heights Free Church in the area of Chicago. And he came down to be the conference speaker for the missionaries. The man on the left is Lee Hegel, who was a missionary there for some time. God uses just ordinary people. And as you look at the sunset, I want you to think about it in terms of perhaps God may be calling you, leading you into a ministry like the ministry that these missionaries have in Zaire.
Just ordinary people. God uses ordinary people. He chooses people. time.